Welcome to A State of Mind, a podcast series all about motivating, inspiring, and educating you in the art of selling luxury real estate. This is Tammy Sims, trainer for the Institute for Luxury Home Marketing. In this episode of our Blueprint series, we're stepping into the topic of winning luxury listings. And that starts with understanding and researching the luxury market. Joining us today is Institute Guild member Sherry Ann Green, who is using luxury market reports through video to position herself as the luxury expert in her Washington, D.C. market. Today's podcast is brought to you in part by Real Marketing, the only marketing firm recommended exclusively by the Institute. Real Marketing utilizes over 25 years of expertise, and their products are built and customized for you to dominate any neighborhood, anywhere. Go to realmarketingforyou.com. That's realmarketing4you.com. Also, look for past A State of Mind episodes with CEO David Collins as our guest. Today, we are pleased to have with us Sherry Ann Green, an award-winning realtor with Coldwell Banker Realty. In 2019, she was recognized as one of the top 1,000 out of 50,000 agents and is a member of the International President's Elite, which recognizes the top 3% of Coldwell Banker agents internationally. Sherry Ann has a background in marketing, communications, contract management, and negotiation. Her previous career focus as a marketing executive won her the Adweek Project Isaac Award for Innovation and an inaugural DC Inno 50 on Fire Award, recognition as one of the most prominent figures in the marketing and advertising industry. A 28-year resident of the DC area, Sherry Ann's love of the arts, architecture, culture, and design, which influence her vision for real estate, is evidenced by her support of and memberships in various organizations. She's a volunteer for Georgetown Village, board member for the Friends of the Georgetown Waterfront Park, and board member for the Coldwell Banker Cares Foundation. So today, we're going to explore step 4 in the Institute's luxury marketing blueprint, winning luxury listings. We believe that positioning yourself as an expert is key, and there's no better way than truly understanding the luxury market. Sherry Ann has created a video series based upon the Luxury Market Insights report that's produced for Coldwell Banker Global Luxury by the Institute, and it really caught our attention. Sherry Ann, welcome to the podcast.
Tammy, thank you so much.
We are so happy to have you here.
It is great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Let's give our audience a little more information about where your market area is and what types of properties you typically work with. So you're in the Washington, D.C. area. Tell us what parts of that you work in.
That's right. I live in the heart of Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. And most of my business comes from D.C. proper, but I also cover and am licensed in Northern Virginia. And if you look at a map, we all are very close, just over the river. Sometimes we call it over the moat, to be funny. But the majority of my business is in the district. And the district is broken up into 4 quadrants that all stem out from the capital: northwest, southwest, northeast, southeast. I do most of my business in what's called Northwest Washington. And my main focus neighborhoods would be Georgetown, Foggy Bottom, the West End, DuPont Circle. We have a lot of funny names, but it's a beautiful city.
They are memorable, that's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So in those areas, what types of properties do you typically work with?
Certainly. So being a city, a lot of my work has been with condos. That's probably 60% of my business, as you can imagine. A city, we have to fit a lot of people into a very small space, especially the district, which is a smaller footprint than other cities. And then we have a lot of row homes. So that's probably 35% of my business. And somebody who doesn't live here might think of a row home as a townhome. So it's a home that sits right next to its neighbor. But ours are old, and before HOAs really became popular to make them townhomes. And you are responsible for all of it: ceiling, roof, foundation, walls, even though they touch your neighbor. So I use the old historic word of row home or row house versus a more modern word of townhome. And then we do have standalone properties as well. And that's probably about 4% of my business.
Excellent. And I really appreciate that very thorough description of the row house concept, which some of our audience will be familiar with, but others, I'm sure, will appreciate that education.
We're an old city. 1751 Georgetown was formed. So we've got some really old, beautiful, historic properties.
Well, all the better to market with, I would say.
Absolutely. People do love seeing what they look like, no doubt.
So we've shared a little bit about your general background prior to becoming a realtor. Tell us, how long have you been a real estate professional?
Certainly. I was licensed in 2016. So just about 6 to 7 years ago. And I came, as you mentioned, from an advertising and marketing background. Actually, the last role that I had at the agency, I was the business development director. So a lot of what I did there, really, I do now. And if you think about it, contract management, business development, marketing, communications, public relations, how do we talk about a product? How do we talk about ourselves? We are the product to start with, right? When we're doing business development with a new client, a marketing presentation is really an interview every time. And so I had a very long career there that I loved, and it was very fun, but it was time for me to be an entrepreneur. It was time for me to have my own business. And real estate had always been sort of in the back of my mind. I had bought and sold several personal properties, and each time I sort of analyzed the process. What was great? What would I do differently? Gosh, I wish I had known this. Why didn't somebody tell me that? Or whatever it was. And so that really became the what do I do next answer. And it was something that I loved, and I love talking about homes, which you should never get into real estate because you love homes. But but I had all of the other, you know, skill set from business development, pitching myself, presenting myself, presenting my company, presenting a product, and then managing a project from start to finish and being in a service business, which is really what, you know, we are.
Absolutely. And what a perfect set of skills and assets to bring into the real estate profession. I think that's fantastic. So tell me, do you work as a solo agent or do you have a team?
I am a solo agent. I have been from the start. Lucky enough to have a really great sphere of influence, having lived here for 28 years, being at the same agency for 17 before I did this. I knew a lot of people, and I think that really helped to sort of launch my career. People had worked with me or known me in some sort of capacity in the industry or as a friend. And so that sort of transferred into them trusting me, I think, faster than if I had just started out of college, if you will.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. And I have to say that there's a great deal of respect for real estate professionals who are doing it solo these days when there's a lot to it. So, all right, let's dig into the topic at hand.
Sure.
You have taken advantage of the resources that were available to you from a larger authority, if you will, and used it to position yourself differently than other agents in your market. So tell me, what caught your attention about this particular report?
Certainly. So the report is very comprehensive if you've seen it. I know you have, if our viewers have seen it. It's a probably 140 so pages cover to cover. And I saw it and I started reading it. And then I actually saw the podcast, listened to the podcast with Michael Alsenu and Diane. And it really struck me as chock full of great information. People love talking about real estate. And it was one of those products where I thought, this is something that would be great to share. And it's hard to get everybody to read 140 pages, but there were so many insights and it was so robust that I thought there's got to be a way that I can share this rather than just handing it out. Certainly, I can give it to people and have this one-on-one conversation, but what's the broader way that this could be shared? And that's where I came up with thinking about what if I turned it into the start of a series on luxury and pulling in other videos that I've already done that relate to luxury. And then how do we, you know, sort of extend that? So that's what I wanted to do, was bring the report to life in a different way, and then hopefully encourage people to read more, but also break it up into, you know, pieces that
manageable. Manageable.
That's it.
And when you and I were talking prior to the recording, you mentioned the idea that storytelling through video versus two-dimensional marketing in a print piece in any capacity, whether it's two pages or 100, had a really captivating appeal. So tell us what kind of stories you're telling in the videos.
Certainly. Yeah, thank you. That's exactly it. I mean, it was sort of this aha moment. You know, we have all of this knowledge, we have all of this data and all of this insights. And people who live in Washington are very intelligent. We have a very intelligent, thought-seeking, insight-driven community. And I knew that it would be something that would be important to them, just like it is to people around the globe. And having this knowledge sort of validates what we do as an agent, right? It sort of validates that you know what you're talking about. In any position in real estate, you either need to know about the house at an open house, or you need to know about the market you're serving, whether it's a city, a neighborhood. And in this case, it's luxury. And I wanted to help establish myself as the authority, one of the authorities of luxury. What does that mean? What does that entail? How do we envision that? What do we see around the globe? And so that's really where this storytelling came into mind. And I broke it into four parts to tell a story. I felt like it was easy to group into sort of four different distinct categories and tell the story around those topics rather than luxury as this big picture. So if we break it into what happened 2020-21, and is it happening in 2022, right? And then what were the trends that we saw for the buyer? What did the luxury buyer look like? And what does that story look like? What were the market trends that we saw in terms of what homes looked like and how people wanted to function in them? And then what's the global outlook? Did everybody in Paris think the same way that we did, you know, or was it different? And so that's really how I wanted to tell each of those four stories and break up that report so it's digestible and easy to manage and also piques certain people's interest on different topics.
It makes perfect sense to me. And those manageable sizes, I was going to ask if you had initially thought of doing the series or just a single video, but I think you knew right away that it needed to be broken up.
You're exactly right. It was one of those where, you know, you can get into a very long format on YouTube. I have tried to work to keep my channel in sort of this sweet spot of 8 to 12 minutes. And I think that's enough that your viewer can learn, my viewer can learn, but I don't necessarily lose them. And so having it that way in a nugget where people can listen in a 10-minute time frame or so. And then also, again, somebody may be very interested in what's happening globally. Somebody else may be very interested in the luxury buyer. Somebody else may be very interested in what does a luxury home look like. So we tell each of those little stories. But it was immediately I thought, how do I break this into pieces and make it a series? And the other part of that, Tammy, is that it's such a great resource. It makes sense to extend the use of it.
Absolutely.
More than just once, right?
Yep. The leveraging factor is just built in naturally there.
It's naturally built in. That's a great way to say it.
Now, when we spoke earlier, you mentioned to me that you started out editing the videos yourself, and then you hired a professional editor. What prompted you to do that? When did you realize that you wanted to outsource that?
So you're correct, Tammy. I started editing the videos myself. Coming from an advertising background, I had been in many an editing booth and studio and never claimed to do it when I worked in advertising. We had professionals, but I knew enough about iMovie and enough to have a creative touch. And it was sort of a fun and interesting creative outlet. And it also taught me a little bit even more about how to speak on camera and how to position everything and to learn to cut down what I do into nuggets that make sense for people. And so I started editing and it was fun, but it also started to become very time consuming.
Sure.
So it was probably the beginning of this year that I said, okay, I really have to just stop and find someone who can do it. And I also wanted to start taking my YouTube videos and breaking them into snippets. And that was going to take me immensely more time to do that. And so that's when I started looking for an editor.
Sure. So this is about maximizing the best use of your time. Lots of us have skill sets and we can do things, but sometimes we need to outsource them. So how did you go about finding a video editor?
It's a great question. There were several options I sort of explored on the broader scale. So, of course, there are, you know, things like Fiverr, and there are some overseas freelance options and companies who will help you locate someone to do that. And those options can be less expensive. I wound up writing a very thorough job description, and I put it onto Upwork, which you may have heard of. And I had editors come in droves, frankly. There were lots of people who were interested in the job. I tried to make it very professional because I wanted really people to understand what I expected so that we would have a great working relationship from the start. So I put it up on Upwork and I had multiple people send me a proposal. I selected three and I gave them all the same raw video. So I recorded a raw video like I always did. And before I had actually started editing it because it was due to be posted on a Thursday or what have you. But I gave it all to them and I said, you know, edit 5 minutes for me and let's see what we can work on together. How do we work together and how does it look? And one just really rose to the top. She researched me. She Googled me. She looked at my website. She looked at my social media. She took into account my brand, my logo, my style as a person, my style, which is the same as a brand, my, you know, when you're an agent. And so she really knocked it out of the park and she communicated well. And that is one of the hallmarks of my business. I tell my clients sometimes I may over communicate to you, but I'd rather you know than wonder.
Sure.
In the process.
But so. That whole process that you just described, somebody who took the time to research you and to really provide a customized presentation for you. Gosh, that's what we strive to do on our end as well, isn't it? Is to knock it out of the park like that.
Yeah, I felt like I had really been treated like luxury, you know, if you think about it that way. She knocked it out of the park. The style, because you can, if you watch a lot of videos on YouTube, you can see different styles. And she just really got the flow of how I work and the graphics that I like to use and the level of professionalism. And it just all was singing right from the beginning. So.
Wow. Now, I imagine that our listeners are probably wondering, gosh, how much does that cost? Are you willing to share with us what that costs to have that professionally done?
Yes. Yeah, so she, and I'm going to forget the number specifically, but she gave me a quote per hour, an hourly, you know, rate. And what we agreed to was an 8 to 10 maximum hours a week. So my typical bill is around 300 a week. And we do a video a week. And now we're really faster now, right? Because she's kind of got certain graphics we use over and over again. And she kind of knows my style. She's probably more expensive than you might start out doing. But I waited long enough that I felt like it was worth my investment. And knowing that I work with a very sophisticated audience, I want to bring in a sophisticated audience. And knowing I wanted to move eventually into hopefully attracting more luxury clients, it felt to me the right way to go and the right investment to make so that it looked really professional.
And it does sound like an investment, but that takes us right into the the topic of return. And I know that you have described YouTube as a long game strategy, but I'm sure that our listeners are curious about the response. Tell us about your subscribers, the way you track engagement. Tell us about the value that you're getting for that investment.
Coming from an advertising background, I see a lot of value in branding and name recognition. And I understand ROI, and certainly we all want that return on investment where we can see it in a dollar format. But part of what I feel I have to do as a new agent, especially in a city like Washington and in a neighborhood like Georgetown, where there are a lot of known people, a lot of people who've been in the business for a long time, I need name recognition. So branding to me is very important. And then there are also people who are moving to Washington who aren't here, and they're coming from all over. As you can imagine, I mean, we are such an international city, right? World Bank, IMF, State Department, military. And so those people may not know an agent here. And so that's one way that I can reach those people. So over the last 30 days, after I've started this luxury, I've seen my subscribers increase. I've seen my watch time increase. And all of the videos I've done so far in the series have landed in the top 10 of video views. And then part of what is great about YouTube as well is Google starts to put my videos when people start searching for different keywords. So that's part of the long range goal too, is that if I keep using the same tags, hashtags, keywords inside my videos, that Google will start to say, here's the answer when you Google luxury real estate, Washington, DC, that they will serve up my video in the search content. So that's part of where we're going with it.
Excellent. And, you know, we're talking about this in the context of positioning yourself to win more luxury listings. So absolutely, that branding, that name recognition is crucial.
And so, here's the other thing, not to cut you off, Tammy, sorry, but here's the other thing that I think it's important for. And I mentioned this earlier, it's sort of this validation, right? That we know what we're talking about. And one of the ways that I use these videos as well is inside of other marketing pieces. So a client will call me and say, let's talk about a condo versus a co-op, or let's talk about the Georgetown market. And I can give them an explanation on the phone. And then I can say, follow up with an email. Our conversation was great. Watch this video if you want to know more. And then I also use the videos in my email newsletters. And two clients I haven't met. Someone the other day asked me about, you know, condo versus co-op. That's a common question. And so I have a video on that. So that's other ways that you can leverage that versus just looking at subscribers or people who comment on your video on YouTube. And then again, hiring the editor, I've been able to take those, and she's starting to cut those down.
Sure.
Into reels, which we all know is important. On Instagram, we take and create a story so that that links back to YouTube. And then I just started a TikTok account. So we've been taking snippets and putting them there as well. So then all of that will start working together.
Oh, I can't wait to watch that evolve. So let's talk a little bit about content. So we're starting with this luxury market report, which is all about the data and understanding the market. So tell us about what nuggets of that information did you find valuable in terms of positioning yourself with that market knowledge?
You know, one of the things that we have to first start with is, what is a luxury property? And that's something people are curious about. You know, they'll see a $10 million home, but luxury starts at a different position in every market, right? Explaining that is the top 10% of any given market, there's an education nugget. It sort of puts a parameter around it for people as they think about it. And then the other nugget that I thought was so fascinating in the report was this growth of wealth that we saw. So I think the statistic, I'll try to get it right, is the number of people with a net worth of 5 million plus increased to 3.6 million people. And it was an over a 19% jump.
Yeah.
And the year prior, it was only about a 2.2% jump.
So that's right.
That's a huge indicator of what happened in the luxury space and who could be in that luxury space, right? I thought that was really sort of an interesting fact to see how much wealth had been acquired over the last couple of years as we looked back over what we had seen. And then there were a lot of things that I think a lot of us knew, but it's fun to talk about in terms of space. You know, there was this fleeing from cities at the beginning, and some people screamed, New York is dead. New Yorkers knew New York wasn't dead, but, you know, and then, but that created a great opportunity for the investor and even the investor in the luxury space. Come back into New York early, get the properties that I want, and then I've set my portfolio up for the future, right?
Absolutely.
So those kinds of things were interesting. And then looking at how the luxury market went as it relayed to even how the luxury buyer was buying anything. Everybody had to move online. And that was something, if you go back years and years ago, there's a great book about how Gilt was started and how they had to convince Zac Posen and some other designers to discount, you know, their brand. And so shopping online and thinking about that online was something that everybody had to get on board with during the last couple of years. And real estate was no different. I had actually sold homes online with my client on the other end of a video call before COVID. And so that skill set was already there, but it was something that moved into a lot of agents' purview and even a lot of buyers' purview. And without the ability to travel everywhere, luxury buyers had to look to do it that way. They had to buy their next home, their second home, or even what may become their first home as their lifestyle changed with COVID. So we had to look at that and how do we provide that service as well. So thinking about it from a total experience of making
absolutely
and easy.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the things that I think is really insightful in the Institute's luxury market report that is publicly available is the analysis of how things perform differently at the different price points. So that's another educational piece that I think is valuable to people. And part of that positioning is saying, hey, I know more about how these price points are performing than what you're reading in the mainstream media.
Yes, that's true. You know, in the luxury market, I think a lot of people thought that that might really take a nosedive, you know, and that's not what we saw. And I think it was backed by this growth of wealth. You know, there were people who had the ability to do things they'd never been able to do before. And, you know, seeing something like a condo slow down, but then come back, you know, and seeing one of the things that I thought was really interesting too, and I guess we thought about it, but really seeing it in black and white print was that we always say location, location, location in real estate. Ah, but over the last 2 years, it wasn't necessarily the case.
It was a different kind of location, location, location.
It was a different kind of location. It was a lifestyle driver, not a location driver, because you could work from anywhere. And so the lifestyle driver, the driver of space and place, became different than I have to be next to my office. And that was really an eye-opening sort of fact to think about it that way. People could work from anywhere.
That's right.
And so location became a different definition than what we had thought of all along. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about what's next, because these resources that we've been talking about are really kind of global in nature, in or continental at the very least. Sure. And so how do you relate it to your local market? And what do you have in mind for really drilling down on that topic?
Certainly. So as I mentioned, DC is a very international market, you know, State Department, World Bank, diplomats. And we also have a lot of corporations here. Nestle, Hilton moved their entire headquarters here. Marriott grew up here. They've always been here. We have a lot of biotech, a lot of education, and Amazon, everybody knows, just is moving their headquarters here to HQ2, they call it. So there are a lot of things that are moving in and out of DC in an international cosmopolitan sort of way that don't necessarily relate to politics. And I always like to tell that to people because I think that's the first thing people think about our beautiful city. And trust me, there is so much more and so many more people. And so taking this worldview from the report, this continental view, as you say, from the report, really speaks to our residents or people who are relocating here because we have so many people coming from so many places. And sometimes they're here for a short term and then they're going somewhere else. And sometimes they're here to stay. But our whole group of people here, our whole citizen, you know, ship, let's call it, is very global and international in many ways, whether we're surrounded by it or whether we've come from it. So taking that and talking about it in terms of living in Washington is really sort of an easy next step. And there is a lot of luxury property in Washington. We are an expensive market to live in and an expensive market to purchase in. So we really have that piece baked into what we are. And so taking it and then, so this, the report has really done this look back of what happened. Then we say, okay, well, what's next? So the next sort of series is, what are some of the more specific things that we see in a luxury home? One of the next videos I'm going to do is all about wellness, and it's magical what people are doing inside their home, especially when it's a luxury property at the 5 million mark and above. And then taking that and branching off of it and even showing homes that relate to luxury property in DC. People love to look at homes. Some of my highest viewed videos are all about the inside of a beautiful luxury home. So that's another way that it really translates, is showing pieces that we talk about in the report or showing pieces that I talk about in another video inside of another house. And then I've started working with Real Marketing on market reports. And the idea long term is to take each of those reports and turn them into a video. So now I really am drilling down locally, but bringing that report to life through video and hitting hopefully potential customers in more than one way.
That is really exciting. I love how you really focused on your vision and thinking about how to take things to the next level. I love that. And we're really, really pleased. We're thrilled, in fact, that you are taking advantage of the resources that you already have, rather than trying to reinvent the wheel and then bringing it into a spot that matches your brand and your voice, if you will, particularly as it relates to the video. And so I'm curious, what other advice would you give to realtors in terms of finding resources that they can leverage instead of trying to reinvent the wheel?
It's such an important thing to do, Tammy, and I'm glad you brought that up because whether you're on a team or an independent agent, there's so many hats we wear. And our real job is to service our clients. But part of that is being knowledgeable, right? But taking the time to do all of this research over again just doesn't make any sense. So there are so many resources at the Institute that I think you can take, and whether you're using them in a newsletter, using them to record a short reel that you put on your Instagram, or using them to do a longer format for YouTube. The work has been done. Certainly, it took some time for me to think about how do I break this up, but I got 4 videos out of about an hour of work of thinking, how can I take this and make it into digestible topics and stories for my audience? So to me, that is one of the most important things, is using what we have, whether it's from your brokerage or from the Institute, and how can I turn it into something else? How can I share it with my audience in a way that's going to reach them, whether it's through a newsletter, certainly a conversation with someone, certainly a marketing presentation at a buyer consultation, but then what's the broader way to get to people I know and want to know?
That's fantastic. All right. So as we wrap up our time together, I'm just curious if you have any other tips or closing thoughts that you want to share with the audience to encourage them to be their best selves and move ahead.
Sure. I think, you know, the more we can be knowledgeable, I was having this discussion with my sister just the other day that we are a licensed profession. And the more we can really educate ourselves and present ourselves in that fashion, it really leads right into that luxury client. You want to be yourself, of course, and people will gravitate toward that. So if you're comfortable with the information that you're sharing, then they will believe that you are that authority. They will see you as that authority. And I think that's really the thing to think about is, how do I find my customer? How do I share what I know so that they can begin to understand that I am in a great position to lead their transaction, whether it's a purchase or a sale?
And that just makes me think about the importance of really digging in and understanding. Yes. The information, everybody has access to the button that clicks out a CMA, and that's what everybody else is right. providing. So truly understanding the market, doing that research and really internalizing that to show that you truly know what's going on is absolutely a key to success. So I'm so glad that that you were willing to share some of your secrets with us. And thank you so much, Sherri-Ann, for being with us.
Thank you for having me. This was great fun. I enjoyed talking about it with you today.
Thanks to all of you for joining us on this episode of Estate of Mind, the Art of Selling Luxury Real Estate. If you're interested in learning more about the Institute, you can find more at luxuryhomemarketing.com. If you like what you just heard, please share it with a friend. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast.